On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, an unforgettable derby, though the citizens of Philadelphia would surely like to forget it. Jordan Walker, the hero, here tonight at Citizens Bank Park. What a scene. What a show it was. We will run through all of it. We will preview tomorrow's All-Star game, and we'll laugh, we'll cry, and we'll have a grand old time. Baseball Barbacast coming up. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast that spent the entire night watching Netflix. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and actually, that's not true, because as you can see, we are here coming to you live from Citizens Bank Park in South Philadelphia after what was a phenomenal, a very memorable home run derby. Our champion, Jordan Walker. Maybe not the people this crowd wanted.
Maybe.
But it's the one they got.
Maybe not the people this crowd wanted.
You never know.
Jordan Walker defeating the hometown hero, Kyle Schwarber, who defeated the other hometown hero, Bryce Harper, earlier on in this home run derby. And yes, Jordan Walker is our champion tonight. A home run derby that was very different than any of the other home run derbies we have attended. This is the 10th home run derby that Jake and I have been fortunate enough to be in the building for. But 2016, that first one was when we moved to the clock that we've grown so used to. Now we have clocks in the actual games.
Yes.
But tonight, no clock. It was all about the swings. The swings. You had 20 swings in the first round, 15 swings in the second round in the finals.
Yep.
And Jordan Walker made it look easy.
Two big winners tonight, Jordan Walker and, honestly, the new format. In a way, we will get to that. We'll talk about Schwarber. We'll talk about Harper. We'll talk about Ben Rice. Maybe, maybe not. Wilson Contreras was particularly impressive tonight, I thought. But I think it's all about Walker.
Yeah, it is.
And he entered this derby as probably like the least famous, the lowest profile contestant.
I think
when we talked in advance about storylines, who is going to be the easiest one to talk about? And I think he was actually the hardest guy to build a narrative around.
Yeah.
But the way that he did it tonight and the way that the story of the evening fits into the story of his career.
Oh, yeah.
Is really interesting, really compelling. And the way that he did it by like tackling Schwarber at the end with an unbelievable comeback, I mean, that was great theater.
Yeah, and I think that is what is so cool, because for the sickos like us, we have been tracking Jordan Walker very closely.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like 2020 was his draft year. Which is a very weird draft year. And that was the first year that I was like going all in on the draft. And could you blame me? There was nothing else going on, right?
No.
Everything gets shut down. And in April, I'm like, I'm bored. I'm going to learn about the 2020 draft.
Some people were doing sourdough. Jordan was doing the draft.
And one of the first players I remember in that process where I was like, whoa, how about this kid? This gigantic kid.
Child.
Kid. He was one of the youngest high schoolers in that draft.
You know what I saw today? Not a kid.
Not a kid,
man,
but he pretty much was that size even in high school, which is what made him so tantalizing. A high schooler out of Georgia, and he was a first round pick. But the question was, all right, what's he going to be? How long is this going to take for a guy with long levers? Ray, listen, it's 6'6", 250. Maybe he was 6'4", 230 as a high school senior.
He big. Can he hit?
Can he hit? He will hit the ball hard. Can he hit the ball in the air? And that was a big part of his early career. But before we kind of do more of that recap, the reason why, as you mentioned, this performance is so great, because it does introduce that story to everybody.
Yes.
In a way that there are so many stories like this throughout the league, guys that pop and then go down and then pop, but not a lot of them get the shine. This is an opportunity for anybody to come through and have their career story be told. And he's a great one. And especially for a 24-year-old who still has so much in front of him. Now people are going to be invested in Jordan Walker.
And that is why the context here is important. He comes up in 23, is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Bad in 24, gets demoted, injured for a lot of 25. And I would say at the beginning of this season, Jordan, in my mind, and maybe this is unfair, he was closer to KBO than he was home run derby heroism. It was easier for me to envision Jordan Walker going 40 piece for the Lotte Giants than it was for me to envision him doing this out here.
And
that is part of what makes that so remarkable to me, is just how unforeseen this all was for Jordan Walker. So then, you know, he comes out this year and the story of the season is amazing. He's just, the potential is like comes to fruition.
100%.
And makes the All-Star team in the Derby. And then when it all seemed down and out, when we had almost, when we had counted out Jordan Walker.
Yeah.
When he was not in our plans, when he was not in our brains, he said, ha ha ha.
Watch this.
Six consecutive home runs. Home runs on six consecutive swings to claw back a massive deficit from Kyle Schwarber in the final. Each swing, what was so remarkable about that, what was so like captivating about it. So he needs six swings, right? Six homers to do it. And so this place is going nuts. I mean, it's going berserk because it's like, well, Schwarber's going to win.
Right.
He hits one and they're like,
we're not worried.
Not worried. Three, tense. And with each home run, it built. And you could see Schwarber on the side, surrounded by the 85 other Phillies that are here, starting to realize that one Mr. Jordan Walker was not going to lose. No, sir, not today. And when the last ball went out, this place was silent.
Yeah.
And that was so weird.
Yes.
Because we're used to like the Derby moment being this wall of noise. And instead, we got 40,000 people heading for the exits. And you could hear Jordan Walker scream.
Yes.
Because of that.
Yes.
I'll never forget that part of it.
Yeah. And we had like a preview of that dynamic in the semifinals.
Yeah.
With Schwarber and Wilson Contreras. Wilson Contreras, I mean, him and Walker were the most impressive in the first round.
Yeah.
And but Contreras also hit second.
Yeah.
Right? And Contreras also got really close. And I really wonder what would have happened if Contreras was able to catch up to him in the semifinals. Would everyone have left before the finals?
Yep.
Probably.
But it was just this wall of noise, right? This stadium was against Jordan Walker.
Yes.
They were booing
yes.
his every move, his every thought, his every piece of his existence was being booed by the stadium. And he either blocked it out or he rode that wave and he sent them home with a remarkable memory that was also a fascinating buzzkill.
Well, let's talk about those six homers in a row again, because going back to the semifinals, Wilson was right there too. He was one behind. If he could have pulled off something similar,
yeah.
he could have ruined the party even earlier. And that speaks to how impressive it was, because Contreras was locked in, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude
in the first round
was, he was hitting him as far as he ever has in his life, frankly. It was certainly in big leagues. And it felt like he was up for the moment. This dude who is, again, to remind everybody, currently suspended. Wilson Contreras will not be playing, I think, on Friday. He's got one or two more games in this.
It is great that MLB's like, come be in the Derby, come be in the All-Star game as a replacement, but once you go back to work.
Sorry, you're not allowed to play. So he embraced it. He was kind of amused by how much booing was going on during his round. Couldn't quite handle it. And then, yeah, for Walker to get all the way to the end and maybe feel that pressure of, yeah, you are going to ruin everybody's night here. And he was like, I'm here to win. I can win. I'm not doing anybody any favors. And for him to become the first St. Louis Cardinal to ever win this event with Albert Pujols in the building.
Not just in the building. On the Netflix park bench.
On the park bench. And Albert Pujols participated, what, three or four times?
Yeah.
Five times he's participated. And never won. And for him, and he was one of the first ones out there. When Walker won, one of the first people out to congratulate him was Albert hustling over.
Yeah.
And you can imagine if you're Jordan Walker, when you're the big right-handed hitter drafted in the first round by the Cardinals, I'm sure many young hitters drafted by the Cardinals, it's like, okay, Pujols. And now to do something that he never did is pretty amazing.
Backwards cap.
Yep.
Shouts out to Griffey. Loved Ollie Marmol, his manager, who is here on Dave Roberts' All-Star staff.
Yeah.
Also backwards cap. Not a lot of managers in backwards caps. Pretty great.
Which is weird, because a lot of them are catchers.
Huh.
But Ollie is not.
Ollie, not a catcher.
Very much not.
I want to talk about the format.
Yes.
Because the format, until Walker made his comeback, felt like kind of a dud. But the way in which this ended sort of validated the structure of it.
I think so.
Let's review. No more clock. Time is a concept. It's in your head. Pitch clock in games, but certainly not here. So what we get instead is a swing-based system. Not an outs-based system. A swing-based system. You get 20 swings. If you homer on your last swing, you can go on forever into eternity. there is a, you know, theoretically, we could still be watching the Derby.
Hey, honestly, Jordan Walker might still be hitting home runs. You know, if he didn't reach that total to pass Schwarber and end the event. Yeah. We should also note that in the semifinal, he beat Junior Caminero and he went second. He could have kept going too. Walker left homers on the table. Right. He was chilling after
getting the target. The idea of that wrinkle was to allow for a dramatic comeback.
Yes,
for a
the
guy
pressure.
To, the pressure.
Pressure. The guy you can't
to,
miss.
Yes. Back against the wall, hit a bunch in a row, close a deficit. Because the downside of the clock system is that if you're down 8 home runs and you have 20 seconds left, like you're probably there comes a time in the clock system where you literally you cannot come back.
Right. Now there was no bonus time here.
Sure.
The flip side of it is also just like the math in this system really works against you because as you run out of swings, if you miss 5 in a row,
yeah.
Now yes, technically you could hit 10 in a row on your last swing. But it just becomes that much more daunting. Yes.
And we had seen the magenta ball.
Yes, we have to talk about this.
Be a bit of a bugaboo for these hitters up until Walker catches fire at the end.
Yeah.
I don't have the number in front of me, but felt like they went 0 for 1,000 on the final ball.
Yeah.
We have seen the literal magenta sphere in the past before.
Yes, or a different colored ball,
yes,
for sure.
The T-Mobile. The magenta ball, no free ads. I don't think it was a visual thing. Mm. I don't think it was perceptive. I think it is, well, let me just say, I think it is harder to pick up the ball than it is normally. But because they needed to then see a couple,
right?
They got out of their rhythm and got out of their flow, and it was hard for them to lock back in that final round. I also think part of it was psychological, where they're like, okay, now I have one swing left. I need to do a good job. I have rolled over to first base. My round is over. And so every guy that came up, I think we only saw like 3 home runs on the magenta ball.
No, before Walker, I don't think we saw more than 1 or 2. I mean, I think guys were missing
frequently. And so we were like, yeah, there's no way he's going to string these together.
And then he did that. That made it that much better. And so, yes, that is what this format gave us, and it was pretty much what we expected in that regard. In terms of how long it took, yeah, a couple of the first rounds definitely dragged a little bit. But for the most part, I don't think we really went that much longer overall than normal. And again, there were definitely parts where it felt like we weren't really finding our flow. Obviously, in the first round, saving the 2 Phillies guys for the very end kind of made for a sleepier first 6 hitters, which is probably going to happen regardless in the first round. There were some pops in there, and we can talk about some of the other performances. But
the Philadelphia crowd handled one of my biggest worries about the new structure,
okay,
which is that guys would just stand there and take pitches. But what happened was, if anybody took more than like 2 or 3 in
on
a row,
on the third, you were hearing it.
Philadelphia, in that regard, you deserved better tonight because you were a main character of this of this Derby.
Yes. Not only were they, now, of course, towards the end, right, they were booing the guys facing Schwarber. They were booing if you were taking pitches, and they were booing the kids in the outfield for failing to catch easy pop flies.
Beautiful.
Which was awesome. And it took a couple of those to realize that that's what was happening.
Yes.
But
far and away,
we got a healthy amount of booze.
So did the fans.
Yeah.
Booze.
Oh, booze. That booze joke. Got it.
If you had to rank every home run derby in MLB history by the amount of booing, the graph would be, exponentially
right
more.
And that's the thing, maybe it's recency bias. Obviously we've had hometown guys in a lot of derbies, but they haven't always gifted us this situation where everyone is here to see Schwarber or Harper win, but in this case, of course, it ends up being Schwarber, and to pit these opponents against each other. By the way, also just the Contreras versus Schwarber one is interesting. I mean, those guys were teammates in Chicago for 6 years.
Yeah.
I have no sense for what their relationship is, but still 2 guys that are certainly, I don't know how Cubs fans were enjoying that, watching those 2 go at it. But I would say that it feels like this was, like, for example, when Bryce Harper won in 2018, he beat Schwarber in the finals. I don't remember Schwarber getting booed by the Nats fans during his round. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but this is the booing capital of...
Exactly. I know, but this is to the point.
The world.
But like, there have been situations where hometown players have been up against someone else. So in theory, it would have been possible in the past, but Philly just makes it happen.
Another dynamic that I think is worth just talking about is our blindness, like our bias towards being here in person.
Sure.
The way that, again, this is very privileged. We have been at the last 10 derbies in person. We have a poor sense for how these events play on television. Was this great on TV? Was this bad on TV? Let us know. Like, I'm genuinely curious. I tried to watch as much of the Netflix broadcast as I possibly could. But in person, I would say it was less frantic, which was a negative for me. Mm. I have believed that the clock system is more entertaining in person and is worse on TV.
Yeah. But that, it was, I think, also one of the bigger issues from what I could stand from the feedback from people that were watching at home, is that the first thought was, okay, now that they're not throwing a ball every 2.5 seconds, we should be able to follow and enjoy and celebrate every individual home run. And it sounds like for whatever reason, they were cutting around like wild, to the point where they were missing some of the most important swings of the whole round of the Derby. And so that just feels like a missed opportunity. So again, we were both kind of keeping tabs
Please
on it.
Let
I was
us
listening
know.
To the broadcast. There were definitely some gaps there. And we could talk at the end of this about more of like the actual production and like the pregame and like the pre-Derby and who was involved in that. But yeah, let us know if it felt like a bad. I was seeing a lot of negative feedback, but I don't know.
The thing that I did appreciate about the Netflixness of this is that Netflix understood what this event is about. I do believe that this is entertainment. That
sure.
Baseball, Major League Baseball is entertainment, yeah, but this is even more entertainment. It's not really about winning, right? It's a different level of competition than what we see day to day or obviously during the postseason.
Yep.
So they hammed it up.
Yeah.
Fireworks, Michael Buffer.
Yep. The boxing ring
shaped like home plate in American flag colors, presumably for Rocky. The funniest moment of the night was Bryce Harper, the last to be introduced, walking into the ring, impromptu jumping up on the ring rope, on literally Harper from the top rope. And
well,
Harper
that's
from
what
the
you
bottom
maybe
rope.
Would have said if he, you know.
Oh, if he'd won.
If he'd like hit more home runs.
But he didn't. But that moment was cool. And you know what I really loved about that moment for Harper? He's a showman.
Yep.
He's a theater kid trapped in an athlete's body.
What a curse.
If he had only been worse at swinging, he would have been in multiple productions
bye
of Hello,
Birdie.
Dolly.
No, Bye Bye Birdie.
Bye
he
bye.
He would have been Conrad. Maybe.
Theater kid.
Hey, producer Andrew Hart's like that joke.
People don't know. People don't know. Jordan, theater kid. Yeah.
I'll be listening to Bye Bye Birdie as soon as we're out of here.
But he, and so when he gets to have these pockets.
Yep.
That he can like be that weirdo version of himself, I find that to be really entertaining and compelling.
Yeah.
And I love that the seven dudes behind him on the stage.
They were like, there's Bryce.
They were laughing their tuchuses off, particularly Schwarber, right?
They were.
The Schwarber-Harper dynamic tonight I thought was interesting. We were so close to Schwarber winning. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Sure, sure.
Before Schwarber catches fire in the final, I would have ranked this as a pretty forgettable Derby.
Yes, we were... Yep, fair.
He gets hot, and then the story kind of becomes in Harper's town, the Robin to his Batman emerges fully from the shadow to take center stage in Philadelphia. And to see Harper cheering him on was cool. To see that he stayed was cool.
They were the last, I mean, they were still down there 10 minutes
for a while.
Yeah.
So for Schwarber to have the, like, Schwarber delivered tonight.
He did.
He
did.
But I won't go home tonight being like, man, Schwarber didn't do enough to win, right?
No, I will say, like, if we just want to zoom in on Schwarber again here, not to say I've been disappointed, but it is, I mean.
Second finals loss.
Right. Now 0-3 in derbies.
He's like the Bills in the 90s.
And he had, again, as I mentioned a few times over the last week, remember, lost to old man Albert Pujols in 2022. So do we see him do this again? Like,
yes. 2033 in Cincinnati hometown return.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, because like otherwise, I mean,
Jordan,
this felt like the time for him to. Oh,
next year, All-Star game, if
that's
we have
true.
One. Bruce Meyer, Rob Manfred, get on it.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Are Phillies fans going to be like, Matt? Eh. I don't know.
All I'm saying
is... He goes and balls out for the... like wins in front of the Cubs
who
fans.
Who cares?
No, it's good. Everyone loves Kyle Schwarber.
Schwarber.
Talk about approval rating as high as it gets in basically the whole league.
Do you hate Kyle Schwarber? Let us know.
Please stop watching.
Yeah, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com.
Yes.
So that would be fun.
Schwarber yeah, no, you're right. Next year, duh. Wrigley Field, Chicago. No, you're right. That'd be great.
You get an extra hometown guy
built
in.
We're going to find out like how much he really wants to
he
win.
He delivered.
It.
Harper emphatically did not.
He did.
He leaned into the really Rocky didn't. Theme tonight.
He didn't.
His bat was meant to look like the hunk of meat
sure.
from the freezer scene that Mr. Stallone pummels with his fists. Interesting choice. I am disappointed as a Bryce Harper borderline stan that this will not be a chapter in the book.
No, and you know, listen, he'll always have 2018. Obviously, he wanted to give a version of that to Phillies fans, understandably. And for him to not be able to do that was certainly disappointing. He did have one homer over the batter's eye that was ridiculously cool.
Not the only guy who did that.
That's the thing. It would have been a lot cooler had Jack Caglione not hit it, you know, 30 minutes earlier. But, you know, it was disappointing. I would have been put like more, I would have felt worse about him if like Schwarber hadn't kind of made up for him, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, I wasn't shocked that this is kind of how it went for Bryce.
Sure.
And Dino Ebel, did he choke? I have no idea. I have no sense as to how well.
Do we have any tinfoil here?
All right, what you got?
Open your third eye. Yeah. Conspiracy corner. Boop, 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 boop.
Okay, Dino.
Dino Ebel, Dodgers third base coach, purposefully threw bad pitches to Harper to tank this Philly season so that the Dodgers can win their third straight championship.
Ooh.
That's the story.
So
no
you
one's
think this
about.
Is going to now, but you could have argued it both ways, right? Because I know you said when we had Mac Elvon, oh, Bryce wins. He hits 500 the rest of the way. Now, could you see it the other direction? Now, Bryce actually has to redeem himself from this embarrassing performance. And, you know, maybe he, like, hits a big home run in the playoffs again. And he's like, see, Philadelphia, that's the home run you really wanted to see. Don't worry about what happened in July.
The Derby's tonight, man.
This is the home run derby I was prepared for, facing the Marlins.
All right.
Anyway,
other things that happened tonight.
Yeah. Well,
so we've talked about Harper. We've talked about Schwarber. We've talked about Jordan Walker. Let's zoom in to some of the other characters tonight. Contreras, I think we did get to
really good.
Caglione was very helpful to this process.
Yeah.
He swung at everything. His round, we timed the first couple, was half the time as the first two, as Contreras and Walker. Those were around 7 minutes. Cags was like 3.5, and that's because he just didn't take anything, which, wonderfully on brand.
I mean, I don't know if that's exactly why MLB put him in the game, but it certainly helped. I think his round... So I was keeping track because we were wondering. Obviously, you get rid of a clock. Well, you can't stop me from timing these rounds. And Cags is round one. Now, part of this is because he hit fewer home runs.
Yeah, did anybody... Maybe he thought there was going to be a clock.
I don't know. His round was under 4 minutes. Everybody else was... I guess Murakami's was only 5, but most of them were over 6. So he was, just cruising along there, taking his hacks. That's what he does. And, yeah, it was like a diet version of the O'Neill Cruz situation last year where he did not win, but he hit a few of the home runs that, like, will stay in my mind. The one over the batter's eye with ease, and then I think he went in the third deck 2 or 3 times, which was outstanding.
I don't think anyone else went up there. When we had Matt Gelbon the other day,
he
talked about how he was expecting Harper and Schwarber to pepper that thing. I mean, it's up there, dude. Like, you really got to get a hold of one.
Maybe Murakami got one up there?
No.
Let's talk about him quickly. I would say a little bit disappointing. Hard to be too...
Coming off the IL.
Yeah, it just came off the IL. And, like, I know I was hyping him up on the show over the last few days, but... He seems like the kind of guy that would want to do it again.
He will be
like,
back.
I think maybe
Murakami
also maybe next year
in Chicago.
Yep.
I'm getting excited for next year. I hope there's no lockout.
maybe that was a little bit disappointing, but he still had a couple homers where I was like, yeah, no, that guy's special. Contreras' first round was arguably the most impressive round until Jordan Walker's final.
I agree. The first round for Contreras made me think that the balls were super duper juiced. He comes out here with a career-long homer in the regular season of 464.
Yep.
He hit 7 balls further than that tonight, including one that went 490.
Yeah.
If I had told you that he was going to go 490, like I said, hey, he's going to go 490. No one's going to go 5.
I mean.
Weird.
Very weird.
Very impressive. That tells me something about the way
490 was the long... Okay, Caminero went 491. Let's talk about him. Okay, he was the I think Guy, because we just saw him do amazing last year, even though we knew this year was going to be a different event, and it does kind of feel like in the semifinal, especially having fewer swings to work with, yeah. His aggression kind of got the best of him.
It's a math problem. He's got the fastest swing in the world.
Yeah.
The faster your swing is, the more swings you can do.
Yeah.
In a time system.
Oh, yes. Thinking about last year. Right. Yes.
And
in theory, yeah.
I predicted that his superpower was his ability to hit balls out that weren't in the strike zone.
Right.
He can go get a pitch.
Yeah.
And because when you're in a clock system, you have to just swing and swing and swing.
Yeah.
His athleticism was going to allow him to turn those bad balls into homers. That superpower didn't play under this format.
Yes. So, a little disappointing. Does the format change mean Junior Caminero is like less likely to do it in the future if he had like less of a good time? I don't know. I hope not. I still think he'll win one of these things at some point. The dude's what, like 23, 24, 22?
One of the things.
How old is Caminero? 23, I think. He like just turned 23. So, I hope he's back. He still hit some of the most incredible. As I mentioned, he hit the longest homer of the night at 491. The balls he was hitting to left center here were just preposterous. Yeah. So he's amazing. I don't have a bad thing to say about him. You know, maybe having him in the final would have been cooler in terms of the narrative story of his star ascending and what happened last year. But, it's fine.
He's going to go deep twice tomorrow and all will be well. True. Last guy to talk about.
Yes, that was a good funny one to finish on.
Ben Rice. Or Dan Rice. Ben Rice was one of two contestants that had their dad pitch to them.
Yeah.
The other being Jack Caglione. Jeff Caglione, I thought, was good.
Fine. But again, Jack swinging, it didn't really matter. He could really kind of throw it anywhere there, and he was going to be hacking. As for Ben Rice and his 83rd percentile, chase rate, too good of a hitter. And unfortunately, Dan Rice was not quite locking in. Now, let's be honest.
I want to give some context on Ben Rice, though, because the worry about him coming in is like from a raw in-box athleticism perspective, he is in a tier below the rest of these hitters. If you look at exit velocity, if you look at distance, he was last both on average and in max
and
among this entire group. And that came to fruition where
exactly correct.
The softer the ball comes in, the more you need to rotate.
You got to supply the juice. And as you mentioned with those stats, that ended up being exactly correct. His hardest hit home run was only 109 miles per hour off the bat, 443, the shortest, longest homer.
I'm not sure if we had data on pitch velocity.
No.
But I feel pretty confident that Ben's dad, Dan, was the slowest of all the BP tossers.
And to that point, I will say I was happening to be tuning in to the Netflix broadcast during Ben Rice's round. Two fascinating and hilarious things from that. One is that they were going on and on about how Ben Rice crushes heaters. You can't get a fastball past this guy.
Well, you can
it's
get...
like, well, yeah, but his dad throwing 40 miles an hour, he might pop out a few times and not win the home run derby.
That was hilarious. Like, watching this tonight, if I had to rank the eight hitters by how much I feel like I could get them out right now, I think Ben Rice is number one because I'm below the hitting speed.
For sure. 100%. And then the other interesting thing was Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
Said that one of his biggest regrets was not having his dad throw to him.
Wow.
Now, Anthony Rizzo only participated once in the Home Run Derby. That was in 2015, where he lost in the first round to Josh Donaldson. But yeah, now I bring that up as a point to say that like our perspective, and we've been maintaining this, is like, listen, if you want to win, probably shouldn't pick your dad. I know Todd Raleigh shouts out to him, but that's a college baseball coach.
Who happens to be Cal Raleigh's dad.
Who happens to be Cal Raleigh's dad. At the same time, listening to Ben Rice talk about being in the Derby beforehand, he's just like, this is so cool. I'm Ben Rice. I went to Dartmouth. I'm in the Derby. I've already won. I'm hitting second, third for the Yankees.
Sure.
Like, life is good. He probably wasn't expecting to win this anyway, considering the field.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, I'm going to go do the Home Run Derby with my dad because that's freaking cool. I know we're just – it's easy for us to just be here like, what are you thinking? You're trying to win.
Loser.
Don't pick your dad. That's a crazy decision. No. We don't have to over-explain the fact that it's extremely cool for Ben Rice to hit throw him in the Derby.
I'm looking forward to the year where we get our first mom.
Yeah. That – you know what? There's a version of that I'm blanking on.
Who it should have been. Yoenis Cespedes.
Oh my God! Yeah,
our hero. His
it's
mom.
True. She was a legendary softball pitcher in Cuba.
Yep.
Now, would she
underhand?
Under
allowed?
Tough for the L screen.
You'd have to. They make softball L screen.
They do. They do. That would be interesting. Don't know how that would work. Anyway, so there you go. That's the recap of all the actual participants. Finally, on Jordan Walker, and then we can kind of wrap on the Derby and look forward to tomorrow. I mean, again, just for Jordan Walker, now with this Cardinals season, we are entering a very interesting time for the St. Louis Cardinals with the deadline coming up. But what's clear, Jordan Walker, this dude ain't going anywhere. And yeah. I know they just gave J.J. Weatherholt an extension.
Sure.
But I got to wonder if this is another guy who's a lot closer to free agency, that is maybe this is someone you build around. And not because he won the Home Run Derby,
sure,
but just because what he's become this season. To finally tap in to this humongous raw power, he was a pretty good hitter as a rookie, but he wasn't elevating the ball. And if you're watching someone that's that big and strong, it's like, come on, dude, elevate. And it's so cool that he gets to show off that he's made that actual adjustment in real games, and now he gets to do it at the Derby.
But it seemed tonight, and this is just another impressive element, that he had a plan to kind of hold back.
Yeah. And
in the first round, true. I don't know if he spoke about this in the broadcast, but in the first round, he was not swinging that hard.
No.
Especially, so we see Contreras go out there. He hits some 490. I'm like, Jordan Walker's going to hit one 680. And he's just kind of nice and easy.
Mm-hmm. Low line drives.
Yep. Let the ball carry. And he had enough juice at the end. And then he just looked really comfortable.
Yeah.
Anything we saw tonight, does it fundamentally change the way I think about Jordan Walker on the field during games moving forward? I would say incrementally, yes.
Sure.
With an entire crowd rooting for him to fail, he met the moment.
Yeah.
I now believe in his ability to feel comfortable in those types of spots a little bit more than I did when I woke up today. Sure. And I think that's what's cool, because what is this about, really? The Derby? It's an opportunity. It's a stage to learn about these players.
Yeah.
To elevate them, to focus on them. Think about how a typical baseball broadcast works, whether it's your day-to-day local one or your Sunday night baseball broadcast. Mm-hmm. Guy steps up to the plate. You have no idea how long you're going to get to talk about him if you're the broadcaster. Mm-hmm. He could have a 10-pitch at-bat, or he could roll over on the first pitch. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to highlight the guy's story, that's a very difficult thing to do on a broadcast.
Yes.
However, here, you're going to have 8 minute, like different
well,
6 minute
the thing.
Intervals.
You earn more time of them talking about you in a way that doesn't really exist during the season. Now, of course, you go to the playoffs and they talk about you more, but you understand what I'm saying, because just kept advancing. And now gets to have that moment. It was well earned. It felt like, and that was the cool part. I know a lot, everyone here, of course, wanted to see Schwarber win it, but like it's hard to be mad at Jordan Walker. Like, this wasn't one where Schwarber disappointed and then he just kind of won by default. Like, no, he had to step up and take it, and that's exactly what he did. And I'm pretty happy for him, and I'm pretty excited to see to elevate him and to for him think about him as one of the brightest young talents in the game, because he's still so young. I know this is his fourth season, but he's still so young.
I'm thinking of the little Phillies fan kid driving home. Well, hopefully not driving. But riding in a car being driven after the game.
Who was
thinking like, I'm sad, that was cool.
Yeah, I hope
and
so.
And very rarely do you leave a sporting event with that mix of emotions.
Yep.
That was not what I wanted. I enjoyed that experience. And I think that is how I feel right now.
Yep.
Congratulations, Jordan Walker. Congratulations to baseball, because that delivered. There was a moment in the middle of the Derby where we were talking to a friend of the program, Andy McCullough, and I was like, this has disappointed me so far. Mm-hmm. Andy then left, and everything got better. Moral of the story. Before we get out of here, let's take a little glance at tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
There will be a game on this field tomorrow, the 96th Midsummer Classic, the All-Star Game.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, what I was about to say is maybe we'll still end up with a swing-off again tomorrow, right? Last year, we had the first ever swing-off when we
Harper Redemption?
When we had a tie game. Schwarber, of course, the center of that. So he's won that mini derby. Well, this year, so what, I bring that up because, frankly, normally we don't care about the game that much. And, like, there's elements that are cool. There's certain pitcher-batter matchups that are cool. But what was so, you know, incredible about the swing-off last year is that none of us were thinking about it for the entire day. And then
in the ninth
Stephen
inning,
Kwan tied it with a
single.
Swinging bunt, whatever. And suddenly we were all looking around like, wait a minute.
How's this going to
work? Hold on. Hold on. And then we had that amazing swing off.
We're like Googling the CBA.
And so maybe some people knew going, it's not like they announced it in the middle of the game, but a lot of us realized it. Tomorrow, let's just be honest.
Rooting for it.
We're rooting for a tie. And I don't know if the crowd is going to really know. I don't know
Jordan.
If there's going to be enough people here.
Jordan.
But this is a fascinating thing.
The beautiful irony of America, a country that despises the concept of a tie more than any other nation on this planet.
It's true.
Right? We hate a draw. We hate we hate splitting the points. Okay?
This is why on it's America's pastime.
But
we don't do ties.
We don't do ties. But on America, on a day meant to celebrate America 250, in the city in which America was founded.
Oh, man.
This
in which we liberated ourselves from draws.
That was in the Constitution, signed not 5 miles away. The Declaration of Independence, Jordan, it says,
man.
We the people.
Yeah.
Do not do ties. We don't do draws.
Nope.
This crowd will be cheering, or at least they should be cheering, for a tie tomorrow. We had the press conferences today.
Yeah.
Dylan Cease, Christopher Sanchez up on the dais with Doc Roberts, skipper for the Dodgers, and John Schneider, skipper for the Blue Jays. I would say the highlight of my day, and this is true every year for All-Star, is the guy that never thought they'd be here.
Mm-hmm.
Watching them experience 100%. The moment. And today, that was easily Ernie Clement. Ernie Clement,
oh, yeah.
Who was the leading vote getter in the American League, second baseman for the
Canada.
Toronto Blue Jays, oh Canada, home and native land, pushing Ernie up the charts. Ernie now has been a cult hero character for a year. I would say it's really started and it really started and took off in the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah.
But he was still really liked and appreciated, and we started to understand that he was going to be an everyday player and whatever. And I think this season has been a lot about him learning to grapple or, like, live in the notoriety, and he is really well suited for that because of how Ernie Clement is wired. Like,
yeah,
he is naturally charismatic. He is a good-looking dude.
Yep.
It's all good. But to watch him awed out here, a guy that just ripped 30 hits in the playoffs, to, like, be walking around the field and be like, this is cool.
Yeah.
We want that joy, that awe.
Oh, yeah.
That's what keeps us young. That's what keeps fans tuning in. The people that appreciate the scale, the scope, and the stage that this game can provide.
As I mentioned on the last show, All-Star Game MVP is one of the funniest awards we have because it's literally a random number generator. I mean, with the amount of substitutions that you have, with the randomness of who's starting versus coming off the bench because of the fan voting, it's impossible to say who that MVP is going to be. Now, that said, we've speculated about, okay, who can make this their week, right? Jordan Walker just...
Head start,
not starting tomorrow, right? So he'll probably get a couple at-bats. He'll come in at some point for, you know, I guess Soto or Brandon Marsh,
sure,
in the outfield. But who are the players, or honestly, pitchers? I know we've had so many pitcher replacements, so there's not many to choose from.
Yep.
But who are, we can wrap up here, who are the players or pitchers that you're thinking of going into the game tomorrow?
Cease is one. He has never been to an All-Star game before. He's going to get to start. His stuff is electric.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see him go against the top of the NL lineup, which is all lefties.
True.
So the first five hitters in that NL lineup are all lefties.
Yes.
Dave Roberts.
We've got
rookie mistake.
Schwarber, Soto, Freeman, Abrams, Muncy. I'll go this for the bold prediction.
Would you go with an opener? Chapman.
Oh,
if I'm
man.
John Schneider,
back
I'm,
to his starting pitching days.
I would
went so well.
Open with Chapman tomorrow.
I think Dylan Cease. Here's my hot take here. Bold prediction.
Yeah.
I don't know how bold this is. Dylan Cease's velo is up this year. I could see him throwing the hardest pitch of his career in the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Dylan Cease is such a fascinating personality that I don't know how much he's really going to care about this to the degree that I'm sure it's an honor for him, but
did
it's like,
see his shirt
is he going to be
he was wearing today?
I know.
Is where he was
I don't even want to spoil. I almost just want people to go look it up because you couldn't possibly imagine.
I don't know if we talked, someone talked to him about that particular shirt, which is a vintage Aladdin themed t-shirt with the genie from Aladdin on it. I believe he spent a good amount of money on that shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because it was like John Schneider in a nice button down or polo, yep. Dave Roberts and Christopher Sanchez in a full uniform,
yep.
And Dylan Cease in a shirt with the genie from Aladdin.
Yes. Very funny.
Hey,
so,
Dylan, quick question. Your shirt.
So maybe he throws the hardest pitch of his career. I don't have exactly that number, but it would probably be, I don't think he's ever thrown 101. So
yeah.
Maybe he'll do that.
My pick's the click for tomorrow.
Okay.
Mike Trout.
Yeah, we got it. I mean, it's so cool to see him here.
Mike Trout,
so
who
cool.
has a reputation of crushing it in All-Star games.
Oh my God, true.
He has won the All-Star Game MVP in the past. He is good all the time. He is even
That's
good
true.
Here.
He's leading off.
He is leading off. I think that he is... Keep an eye on Mike Trout. Hey, keep an eye on Mike Trout. Juan Soto, who has been having a bummer of a year on the crappy Mets.
He sure has.
This will be the last high-energy game he plays for a long time. I expect him to rise to the moment tomorrow. Juan Soto. And then my last one off the bench, Pete Crow Armstrong.
Oh, started last year.
Yeah.
Not starting this year because we got good old Andy Pages at center. But yeah, maybe steal a base.
And then the last one, I guess I should say, Junior Caminero, who we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck today by how many people were trying to talk to him. Is that the most Ooh. People at a media day surrounding the Tampa Bay Rays rep?
That's a great question.
Probably.
It's a good
I mean,
way to think about it.
He was swarmed.
Yeah. He has, we talked about it last year. He has already started to transcend that market in a very impressive way. I will finish up before we say goodbye. Talking about just, I'm curious about the sequence of relievers, and this might be very related to the ties.
I am not curious.
No. Hear me out.
About the sequence of relievers, so please.
Hear me out.
Convince me.
Let's say we got a tie game. Seventh innings. There's an overdue 6-7 reference for you as midnight approaches. The pressure will be on one heck of a stable of arms to
okay.
keep this game tied. Aroldis Chapman, Cade Smith, Louis Varland in the American League, in the National League, Yoan Duran, Raisel Iglesias in his long overdue first All-Star game, and Mason Miller. So to that degree, if we have that tie, I'm going to be counting on those guys
yeah.
to throw up zeros like they always have. Because if they don't, I yeah. will think less of them forever. Unless it's Cade Smith, who's I wrote a feature about today, and you should read it. But yeah, you see what I'm saying here? Like,
I
if
do.
We're rooting for the ties, let's bring it back to that. There
yes.
are arms that are available to preserve it, and as long as they can get, if you're the National League pitcher, as long as you can get Tristan Peters out, you got
the world
shot.
Is the world is your oyster.
You got a shot.
So that's it for tomorrow. Cheer for the tie. Channel
root
for the tie.
The
root for the tie game. If we don't get it,
oh my
it's
God.
A dang shame. Thank you all for tuning in. This was a joy, a delight, a phenomenal opportunity. What a blessing it is to have this beautiful backdrop, this unbelievable setup, getting to podcast live at our 10th ever All-Star game. It feels like just yesterday, Jordan, you and I were piling into my mom's Toyota Highlander and driving from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
to San Diego for our first
yep.
ever All-Star game in 2016.
Yep.
We've come a long way. There's a lot of people we have to thank. We don't have time to thank them all now, but we do have time to thank three people, our producers.
Colin Brennan, Andrew Hartz, Rob Thomas. Shouts out to those guys for making all of this beautiful set possible. It looks even crazier behind that camera, but we appreciate it so much. We will be back on Wednesday, not going live after the All-Star game, but we'll be potting Wednesday morning before we head home to recap the All-Star game.
Yep.
Look forward to the second half, although we'll also be back later this week on Friday with when the real baseball returns. But yeah, there you go. The Derby. Jordan Walker, congratulations.
Wow.
Well earned, well deserved. I will remember this Derby for sure because you had to earn it. And they were booing you, and you said, watch me. I got this. So congrats to Jordan Walker again. And congrats to you, Jake Mintz, for writing this in time for us to do this podcast. We appreciate
Boy.
It. Go read Jake's story. Yep.
Moral of the story tonight,
yep.
and I'll leave you with this. If a bunch of people in Philadelphia are mad at you, go yard six times. Yeah. And then they'll leave.
Simple enough. Simple enough. Thank you all for listening, for watching. Make sure you subscribe to the new Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel that you are hopefully watching right now. If you're listening the next day and you haven't subscribed yet, make sure you give us some support over there on that channel. We're going to enjoy our last day here in Philadelphia tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching. And we will talk to you soon.